Yes, please sit comfortably. It's been hard work to our bodies. Curious, you know, this big bell gong has a hole in the middle. Sorry, nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about. just I became curious. We've been working with our body and mind, or to be with in a more direct way, but also, as I've been saying from the beginning, how to live our life. This is also so it's a. And if we are used about the practice, we already have certain perceptions. Or anyway, the life itself, as a whole, we like to reflect too. So for this evening, I'd like to talk about the law of karma. And when you study about Buddhism, sooner or later you come across with this karma, law of karma, and people can talk about previous lives or many lifetimes, something like this, and they are also helpful if you reflect on skillful and right way, but still things of past lives or future lives, probably to most of us or all of us, it's a matter of speculation. So tonight I'd like to focus on just this lifetime, what's happening with us, and I'd like to talk about one story. In fact, I used to talk about this story often some years ago. Forgive me, I'm going to recycle it again. You may have heard. This is a story from Ajahn Koesako, my teacher in Thailand. When I was in Thailand for over 10 years, he was the most important teacher, guided me in many ways. And you may know, very, very unfortunately, very surprisingly, he dissolved two or three years ago. But anyway, that's a different matter. But this story itself gives us a very interesting or clear idea of what law of karma means to us. And this story is, when was it? When we spent the Wassa, or rains retreat, together in Tokyo, Japan, 1989. So quite some time ago, 26 years ago. And so we are staying in a Buddhist temple, a Mahayana Buddhist temple, and one time a Japanese lady, I think, came to visit us and then talked with him, asking for some advice. Her difficulty was something like this. She was probably in her 50s, I guess. And she had a daughter, early 20s. And so the mother, she came on her own. And she was suffering. She had a job that was okay. And every day after the work was over, when she came back home, she started feeling unhappy because her daughter was not nice to her. The daughter was pointing out various things or finding faults with what her mother does. For instance, "Oh, mom, the way you eat is not beautiful. The way you remove your shoes is not tidy." I can carry on. No, you can imagine this kind of details of the life, and people pointing at, "Oh, you shouldn't do this. This is not nice. This is not proper." Or that. You can imagine, if just once a while it's fine, but you hear this one after another, and you are living with in the same house, and you're hearing this from your family and your daughter, not a happy experience, and you are doing every day. Well, certainly depressing experience. So after the work is over every day, instead of feeling, "Oh, I'm home, now I have time to enjoy." Instead, "Again, I have to see my daughter." That kind of suffering. So she wanted to have some advice from Ajahn Kawesako. And how it goes? He looked at her. Well, actually, when the mother came in, and then so having some chat, so he could notice what kind of personality or person she is, and he thought maybe she's one of the person in Thai they would call dosa jari. Or in Pali, dosa charita. And teaching, Buddhist teaching, if you look at the charita, temperament, and the Buddha says there are six kinds of temperament, charita, dosa charita. Dosa is anger. So the temperament, the people who have temperament of prone to anger, there are other five, raga charita, it's a more temperament of lust. Moha charita, temperament of delusion, you know, it's a defilement. Three, dosa, raga, dosa, moha. Fourth one, satta charita, so the temperament is more towards faith. Buddhi charita, buddhi, body, buddhi, buddhi, I think. So the temperament of intelligent. Wow. Yeah. And the sixth one is vitaka charita. So Pali must be vitaka charita, the temperament of doubt. This is very interesting way to categorize people's temperament. Vitaka jarita, the temperament of doubt. For instance, if you ask the person of this jarita to do navigate the car, or just give advice about which way to go, like this. Can be interesting experience. If you go to this street, oh, maybe you can turn there. Yeah, that would be better way to go. And the next moment, yeah, maybe that was not the right one. No, I'm not sure. And if you go further, yeah, we should have taken, but maybe this is fine. And the next minute, says, what? So this kind of doubt, you know, it's a temperament. And unfortunately, and we have one of these temperaments, and it's a character. And so the dosa jarita, raga jarita, and then this dosa jarita, also this person of dosa jarita tend to like order. And a good example is if you come to the monastery, and those people practice Vinaya, monks' discipline, they become very strict. You shouldn't do this. You have to do this. I mean, it is correct, but because of the temperament, it becomes not just square, but the sharp edge. So you have to do this. You cannot do this. 12 o'clock, stop. You cannot do this according to rule this. Very proper, but possibly unpleasant. Raga jarita, they love sensual pleasure. I can't go too far, but even if you have having a tea or coffee, people say, oh, maybe not good for the body, better not to put any sugar, but they love sweet things. Tastes nice. That goes first. Not like what is order, what is proper, but how can we enjoy? So this is a temperament of raga, charita. So I shouldn't go too far. So there are six kinds. And then this lady looked like the one of dosa charita. So the way she, the manner or the some appearance, the way she talks about things, sometimes we can sense, oh, this person is this, or this person, what's that? So the Ajahn thought, maybe she's the person of dosa jarita. So he asked, how about your daughter? Is she the same to your husband, her father? No, I don't think so. Okay, so he got it. He thought he got it. Possible story behind it is, you know, this mother, being a dosa jarita, she can be, yes, you need to do it. No, you shouldn't do it. This is right. No. Yeah. But this is actually exactly what the daughter is doing to her. So when this daughter was small, when the mother is raising this daughter, yes, the parents' duty is to guide the children, educate, protect, and giving care and so forth. But yes, for Japanese mother, as a Japanese mother, to teach what is right, what is proper, that kind of things can be serious. Depends, but the daughter, imagine maybe she's 3 years old, 5 years old, 10 years old, small. So even if she doesn't know much or she doesn't feel, I don't like this, but mother is stronger. So mother says, no, you shouldn't do it. Then, no, you can't have it to me yet. You do this, that kind of thing. So the daughter simply had to accept it. Although she felt probably unhappy. Maybe initially she was obedient and listening, but imagine you hear one after another, not necessarily happy experience. And now, just naturally, the daughter is now grown up, 20 some years. I don't know, I don't remember whether she's still university student or she's also working, but grown up, strong enough. Now, equal to mother, or can be stronger, because nowadays everything develops so fast, so younger generation know better. If you talk about the computer, something like this, we are already the generation of Stone Age. We don't know much, and the young, but they know everything. We talk. So old days, they're getting older means more wise and lots of knowledge and like this. But nowadays, cannot be the case. Older generation means you are you can't catch up with the speed of the society, and you are almost like a lost generation. I'm a bit exaggerating, but anyway, when the daughter grew up, yes, in many ways, physically strong enough, and also in terms of knowledge or ability, she's equal or even more than what her mother can do. So now she, the daughter, would say, "Mom, what are you doing? No, that's not right." And here, I think the important thing is for the daughter, maybe she doesn't have so much conscious intention to find the fault or pick up things from the mother. This is just naturally happens because she received this from her mother when she was very little, and then naturally it comes back. Same thing can happen to the monks too. Like I said, I'm looking after junior people, but I have to be very careful. If I am very strict about them, then I will receive the same thing. "Oh, Ajahn, you said this. What are you doing now?" I have a responsibility, but I have to be careful. The result comes very quickly. But between daughter and mother, because of their, power balance, when daughter is small, mother is stronger. So one-way traffic of giving, "You shouldn't do this, you should do this." And then daughter had to put up with. Now the balance changes. And then daughter does to mother, and the mother just feel intimidated and then feel really miserable, unhappy. So now interesting is, this is Ajahn Gawesako's thought, further thought is, if what happens in the future? Sometime soon later, this girl, the daughter, may find boyfriend and wants to marry. The mother, this is the time one of the happiest time for her. It's a very important moment of the life to have a marriage, to have blessing from everybody, of course from mother as well. But for mother, yes, she wants to celebrate too, but again, naturally, because of her perception of her daughter, now how she perceives her daughter is she's not that good person because she's not kind to mother, she's not grateful to mother, so forth. That kind of unspoken, maybe the perception, unspoken perception is there in her mind. So because of that, naturally she would find to give natural sense of blessing to whatever she was going to do. Even she thought, the daughter thought, very nice fiancé, but mother cannot see, maybe he is wrong in this way, or this doesn't work. That kind of negative perception can arise more easily than usual case. So, because now this time, maybe physically both are strong, or daughter is strong, but the daughter is actually asking support, blessing from the mother. So in that sense, mother, this power balance, mother is actually now stronger. And then she feels like, no. Or either she says no clearly, or doesn't give full approval or happy blessing towards the situation. So that's, if you see, mother. Well, the same thing, I don't think mother would have particular conscious intention to interfere, but this may happen naturally. Okay? Time goes on. What comes next? The daughter may have a child, grandchild, but now the daughter has, I don't have to use the word grudge, but unhappy experience with the mother. And then, so because of that, the grandchildren may not love their grandma as same as grandpa. Possible scenario. Later on, father, mother becomes even older when she needs help. But again, the daughter, by then, the relation is not necessarily very happy. So because of that, the care, natural feeling of, oh, I want to support my mother, might not be fully on. So this time, the power balance is different because mother is weaker, older. So the daughter has more power on too. And so this this hadn't happened yet, but possible scenario the Ajahn Goesako could think. And but if you think like this, it's possible, you may, as a possibility, it's a painful story, but it's possible. And as I've been saying, very interesting part is not necessarily strong intention involved. Yes, as a mother, she doesn't want to particularly do anything hard or difficult to the children. Instead, actually, like to be helpful, educate, support, or give a right judgment about the marriage and so forth. But result is somehow leading in a different direction. Daughter is the same. And also when in our life too, we can notice when somebody does, let's say, horrible things to another person, and this person, when they do something, sometimes we're not so clearly aware, but the person who receives hard bit, yes, it is immediate, strong experience. So so in this case too, the when this power balance, the stronger one can do something unfortunate because of this story, and then a weaker one has to receive it, has to suffer, but stronger one do not have enough awareness around it. So this is a very simple story, but if you see it, being born to the same family and being the mother and a daughter, oh, this is instead of loving each other, if we are to repeat, when we talk about the karma, often repeat, so if we are to repeat this unfortunate, painful story, oh, what's that? And for mother, to now we come back to the moment, 1989. The future events hadn't happened yet, but at least she's suffering, and she can see from this reflection, I'm suffering pain here, but, and then, yes, you would think this is because my daughter is such a character. She's not grateful to her mother. That's how she would think. But now, having been given advice, and she could think, actually, this pain, where does it, did it start? Oh, actually, it started from her. And also, if we carry on without doing anything, okay, soon maybe you have a chance to exercise something, but later on, it will come back to this person. So, in both ways, one way, number one, I am responsible for this. And also, if I leave it, it comes back to me. And then number two reason, also the, as a mother, the thinking of relation to both, do I want to repeat between her and myself? So this is enough reason to, okay, I want to do something. I can't leave it like this. So when we think of the law of karma, if we, you see, the any Dhamma teaching is the same. Important thing is to apply ourselves. We chanted, here today there's no Pali, English, onward, or later version we translated as the N-word. It's opanaiko. So when we apply the teaching, very important aspect is to apply ourselves. So when we recognize this, what's happening? Law of karma is not about the theory of this and that, but this is talking about what's happening with us. So when we see how karma affects us, how karma is happening with our life, we naturally become more reflective and we naturally become more responsible. And I can say attitude towards a life can change. From the one to, let's say, fight with external situation, I don't like it, you have to do it, how can I do that? To become more simply responsible here. Okay, here is my responsibility. I need to guard here. I need to stop unfortunate cycles anymore. So I said the reflection makes our life simple. Simple too. Because to think externally, life becomes complicated. And I mean, this is a very interesting example, but in our daily life we can notice too, for instance, where some people are very kind and generous, and then the person, when they have difficulties, our mind goes like simply, oh yes, I want to help her. How can I assist him? That kind of things naturally arises. So the the law of karma, cause and effect, how we experience is just a result of what we did or how we were. But I repeat again, this is to do work inwardly, not use as a means to judge others or to criticize others. This is a totally wrong way to use the teaching of law of karma. Suppose somebody is in a struggle and you say, ah, that is his karma. Sometimes, we say upeka equanimous. This is a totally different thing. But when I say this is his karma in a dismissive way. This is very different. Dismissive means instead of developing a heart of compassion or sympathy, dismiss, ignore, and then... So what we are doing then is we are creating our own karma. So those who are really aware of what's happening here and then aware of the importance of law of karma, we cannot waste mistakes by judging others, applying law of karma, something like this. It's not that none of us are safe. Single focus should be here. If we are to just say, judging, oh, he's this, she's that, what we are doing, we're just lost, and we are actually creating unnecessary karma. And also, any other suffering when we see, if we study and reflect the law of karma more and more, everything we notice in others, possibly with us too. We can't say this is somebody's problem. So by reflecting this, we become, yes, simple, and then take responsibility in front of us, whatever necessary. And coming back to this mother. Now, maybe having seen its importance, how to improve or change the situation. What's happening is each time when she goes back home, she would see her daughter, and her daughter says this and that, oh, why do you this? And what happens? You hear painful feeling arises, and in Dhamma term, Dukkha Vedana arises. I can do the very concise particular part of paticca sampada, dependent origination. So when you hear the sound, when you are struggling with the pain, this gives you such a wonderful feeling. So paripassa, contact. And then so the sound comes and the contact. And then the feeling, Vedana arises. Sukha Vedana, present feeling. But if something is disagreeable, like when you are sitting quietly and mind is settled, oh, nice. And then somebody making a big noise, you don't like it. So passa, contact. Through your ears have a contact with the sound, but then a feeling arises. The feeling arises is what we call dukkha vedana, unpleasant feeling. And with this, either dukkha vedana or sukha vedana, story can carry on. I won't have more of this. I don't want to have this. Tanha, upadana, desire and attachment, clinging. So the initially just a small thing, but because of this story, tanha, upadana, and so forth, becomes heavier and then solid. With the case of this mother, each time daughter says, Mom, you shouldn't do this, why do you this? Sound comes, and then dukkha vedana arises. And then usually because of this unpleasant feeling, why does she do this? And you, actually, there's a tanha or padana process there, but it goes very quickly to have a whole story of why my daughter is this, and why am I this? And then that feeling, the story becomes so solid, heavy, and then stored here. You cannot express this because the daughter is stronger. But it doesn't mean you let go. It disappears. No, it just stores here, waiting for the time to come up again. This is a difficult part. So maybe right now you cannot do this, or you can maybe complain to your husband, maybe, but just this one becomes heavier, and then a stronger tendency. And when the opportunity is allowed, that is, when she's stronger than the daughter, this one comes out to find fault with the daughter. So this is a cycle of problem. And samsara, we say, birth, cycle of birth and death. But this is just one of a minor version of it, you know, arising heaviness. And then, okay, it dies there because you cannot do anything, but it doesn't mean disappears or something like this. You come back and then does the job when it is possible. So for the mother, what she needs to work with is this Vedana. Vedana, each time when she hears or sees or even thinks from her daughter or about her daughter, yes, this dukkha vedana, unpleasant, difficult feeling arises. And if we are not strong enough, yes, this story carries on. But here, the practice stands. So how to work with Vedana, how to work with whole problem of feelings and thoughts. Now that's why when we come to retreat like this and sitting, and then sometimes quite okay, reasonable, but sometimes pain or unpleasant present feeling. But what we are learning is just to be, not creating too much out of it. So in our daily life, where the story starts, where the complication of the life starts is often from this Vedana feeling. And then either happy feeling or difficult feeling, if we are not aware of it, then whole story carries on, and then the cycle of samsara, birth and death, and the story of karma comes back to us. So for the mother, now she has seen the needs to improve the situation. There's a motivation. But I have to say, it's not easy. Because to work with this strong Vedana feeling, you can imagine in our daily life, there are many things we know we want, this is wrong, I have to work with, I want to, I should not give in, and so forth. But often, once we are in a daily life, so difficult, we give up or... as a theory, it sounds nice, but I don't know how I can do. This is quite often the case. Can be with this one too. So for her, or the similar situation, I can think two things. Number one, reflect again and again this law of karma. Yes, this was the turning point for her to realize okay, I need to do this. So when you feel, I can't do it, then go back to the initial point where you felt, yes, this is important. Until you realize, you really recognize the importance of this law of karma. So sometimes you feel motivated, but we forget. So we go back there and then teach ourselves. Number one. Number two, working with Vedana is not, feeling is not easy at all. So that's why this whole aspect of our practice is necessary. It's not like we look for immediate answer. Often it's not possible. But what we can do is to strengthen our being. Like, you see, when you face the difficult situation, and then dukkha vedana arises, and then the mind is drawn to depression. But if our mind is happy enough, even the dukkha vedana comes, we may have some space to work with it. So to bring more happiness to being is the work. And that one is not necessary you can do it today or tomorrow, but day by day and lifetime commitment. And in this sense, what Buddhism offers us is the threefold practice of dana, sila, bhavana, or dana is giving, generosity, or kind to others. Okay, maybe she cannot do something nice to her daughter. It is not easy. You can do very good, but if you cannot, that's okay. We can wait, but still we can do something nice to others. And then this dana, giving, you know, if you do it, who becomes happy? This one. So by doing this, generally this happiness can be generated more and more. This one to become happier being, dana. And then sila, this is, we've been talking about since last night, morality. And when we lose the perspective, when we feel down, life is not easy, this is not... So we can, the whole thing becomes so dark. But sila is actually gives us a very, very strong protection and a foundation. Because, you know, yesterday I said it's refraining from unskillful actions. And by doing this, we can reflect, actually, my sila is okay. Okay, maybe right now I feel a bit down and then it's not great. But if I think of my sila, actually, I haven't done anything horrible to others. And this reflection gives us a sense of relief, security, or something similar. You know, sometimes in this modern age, we often talk about feeling of insecurity. World is developing so fast, so many things happening, and then lots of freedom, lots of joy, we can talk, and yet internally, where is my... So that the feeling of unsecurity, being insecure, it's not uncommon. And then, yes, come to the monastery, practicing a meditation is really direct means to work with it. But I can say really this was a sila. This aspect of sila helps in this regard. Because just like a sila, sometimes we relate this word to foundation. Okay, it doesn't look like refraining from this and that. It doesn't look like very colorful, attractive. But it keeps very safe place in the heart. Actually, I haven't done anything wrong. By the end of the day, if you reflect what we are doing, right, I'm okay. So this is gives this can give us a it's not necessarily very externally strong sense, but gentle but firm sense of right, I am okay. And to this mother too, and she can become okay. I don't care. I've been working so hard. I raised my child, sacrificing this and that, and the result is this. I don't like it. And going to drunken or do this, that, that possible case. But instead, just to make sure, challenging time, but make sure we are keeping the sila, morality, okay. So that long term, nothing to regret. This is actually gives us a good something in our being, depth, in a depth place of security can grow. So dana, sila, and then the last one, bhavana. So you say meditation. Okay, we are meditating like this. So what we are doing is, okay, meditation also, different way of doing it, but at least the way we are doing this retreat, open to anything, and see, receive them as they are. Okay, sometimes easy, sometimes difficult, sometimes we like, sometimes we don't. But we are learning the attitude of balanced, open, not fighting against, and so on. So this is immediate. You can see immediate means to develop our heart, to work with the situation in our life. So dana, sila, bhavana, maybe if you do this, tomorrow life changes immediately. I cannot agree. But if we commit ourselves in doing this, this gives us a real strength. It brings us happiness, strength, and it's not a cheap answer, it's long-lasting. If we are looking for something real, if we are looking for something long-lasting, of course, it takes time for us to learn this. And, you know, Hiri Otapa, this paint, here, Thai painting. This is, I think, drawn by Kumpan, Thai artist, one of our supporters. And if you come to Amaravati Temple, at the entrance, there's a done by the same artist, Kumpan. And then two deities standing. And there they are, Hiri and Otapa. And Hiri, I look at the dictionary. When I was a junior monk, we were just taught Hiri is shame, Otapa is fear. But somehow the word shame is not, can, the taste of the word is not necessarily correct. So sometimes Hiri is translated as a conscience or moral shame, I said in the dictionary, otapa is fear. So hiri otapa is actually when we think of, when we are aware of the karma, you know, we be, just like this mother's case, hiri, so the shame or conscience. No, I can't this. I shouldn't this. That's not right. That natural sense or otapa is more fear. No, I cannot do this because it comes back to me or because this destroys others or my dear daughter too. So this hiri otapa in Buddhist teaching, it is mentioned as loka para dhamma, or the dhamma of supporting the world. You know, this world, okay, there are many things happening, but still world is somehow okay. Even at the threat of nuclear war or terrorist attack, I mean, horrible things happens. But still we human beings manage to step back to try to live in a reasonable way. What is this? This is a, we human beings have a sense of hiri otapa. Even we don't know anything, particularly Dhamma, but just say, oh no, this is too much. I shouldn't do this. Even sometimes, okay, young people or go crazy and they do maybe horrible things, but at certain point, maybe this is too much. We have to stop, just regain the perspective, so to speak. So this is, you can say, hiri otapa, hiri and otapa in each of us as a human being. So that's why the Buddha says, loka para dhamma, dhamma to para support or protect the world. Without this, world collapse. Endless fighting, or we end up in destroying things. But somehow, this quality of hiri and otapa managed to hold the world. And now, more consciously taking this dhamma of hiri and otapa, we become fully responsible. Each situation. And that's why when you come to Amaravati temple, there is a hiri and otapa. I mean, it is just like here. Once you come, you immediately feel a serene, peaceful presence without thinking much. It really helps. But just symbolically at the entrance, we have a hiri and otapa. Ah. Okay. I come back here. Of safe place, the place of responsibility. Okay. Now I can stop here. So I hope this story of mother and daughter was simple enough to just think, reflect on what is the law of karma. And then we don't have to think why this is happening because of that. This is not what we mean by learning, saying learning law of karma. One or two examples is enough. And then once we recognize what's happening here has a reason, and then what's going to be has a reason, then all related to this person. Nothing to worry about others, but just here to look after this. This is not only with this person, but also the world itself. People around, people you love, people you respect, people you care. First thing is to look after here. Okay.